Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
The European energy situation, you know, we've been talking about it over the last few weeks here on Free Talk Live, and it isn't looking good, especially now that Russia has completely cut off the Nord Stream 1 pipeline to Germany. And I was looking earlier this week, I said, well, there's got to be more than one pipeline from Russia to Europe, and I looked up I looked up Nord Stream 2, and that one doesn't even operate at all. Apparently there was some sort of issue with that years ago.
It never got off the ground. Right. Because, well, it got off the ground and it completed it, actually, but Germany wouldn't license the provide the licenses for them to start operating.
Wow. So they're feeling sorry now.
And it was in relation to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So,
oh, really?
It was. That's why they refused to license it. So I mean, it's really kind of funny because, you know, they're causing their own problems.
They sure are.
Yeah, well, Biden actually had a hand in that also with the sanctions, which led to somebody saying, gee,
yeah, it's true,
the worst thing Biden could think of to do to Russia was to shut down their pipelines. I wonder what he was punishing us for when he shut down our pipelines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's also some sort of repair that Canada had to do on one of the pumps, I guess. And that was also
Canada.
Yeah, I guess that's where they fix the pumps.
You're talking about the Nord Stream line?
Well, I don't know if it's that specific one, but one of them, yeah. One of the pumps for one of the, you know, pipelines in Europe was they couldn't get it. I think they shipped it out for repair to Canada, and then they couldn't get it back because
of
sanctions.
Right. Yeah, I didn't know where the repair center was. I figured it was
that
in
was the
Europe,
excuse but that Russia gave for mm-hmm. one of them for some of the reduced movement of oil. But, you know, it may not have been. It was probably just an excuse. But
maybe
nonetheless,
it's a good excuse.
But it is also true that the sanctions are also part of. You know,
they're the reason why this is happening. Yeah.
Right.
Well, they probably weren't trying that hard. I wouldn't have been. I mean,
who wasn't trying that hard to what?
Russia. I would imagine they weren't trying that hard to get the oil out.
Currently, the Russian government has announced an official shutdown of all natural gas exports to Europe through the Nord Stream 1 pipeline and plans to maintain the shutdown until the EU ends its economic sanctions over the war in Ukraine. This means that around 40% of Europe's energy resources are now gone, with supply chain issues surrounding the other 60% and prices skyrocketing for households and business. And we've given examples over the last couple of weeks, especially with businesses in some cases. I think there was one in Ireland that had more than 20x. Their electric bill went up more than 20 times from 1 month to the next. It went from like 1,700 euros to over 40,000 euro for 1 month's electric bill.
It was insane. I don't remember the numbers, but it was absolutely, you know, the situation where you'd be shutting
down. You can't survive.
Yeah, you'd be shutting your business down over it because it would be, you know, it wouldn't work economically.
You know, some people are seeing 2x, 3x, 5x. We've seen all kinds of examples of what businesses are suffering out there. Of course,
they're suffering way more than we are in the United States. You know, in New Hampshire, we've seen rates double, but in Europe, it's like you said, 20 times.
Well, the argument here is that, you know, as things get worse in Europe, the U.S. is going to follow. That's the point that he's going to make here in this post. He cites an article he wrote back in March where he said, quote, "There's something else the media doesn't talk about much, which is Europe's reliance on Russian oil and natural gas. If you want to see actual price inflation caused by Russia, let the EU ban Russian oil imports," which they've basically now done by setting a price ceiling on Russian oil imports. The G7 countries have all now done that as of, I think, last week. I think we were talking about that a week ago. And
slack-jawed yokels.
Yeah, and he says also, or watch as Putin cuts off the supply. Europe is dependent on Russia. Well, in this case, Putin is willing to sell. It's just that they don't want to pay the market price for the Russian oil, so they're going to get none of it. Europe is dependent on Russian oil and gas for about 40% of overall energy production. They cannot even survive a single year without it. If Russia retaliated and blocked energy exports to Europe, the EU would have to siphon oil from many other countries, reducing global supply dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
This would cause gas prices to explode to double or even triple current levels. Now, I'm by no means am I an expert on the oil supply, but certainly if the EU is siphoning oil from other countries, we already know what they're going to do. They're going to buy it from Russia, and that's what China's been doing. So it's not like the Russian oil is just going to sit there.
Yeah,
it's going to sell.
It's and one of the problems too, though, that is happening is they don't have the facilities to actually export or at least import, you know, sufficient quantities of, you know, oil and natural gas into Europe.
This is going to affect the whole planet, right? Like the fact that Europe is cut off from Russian energy at this point, the Nord Stream 1 pipeline now not operating at all. It had been at 20% of its maximum starting in late July. So for about a month, it went at about 20%, and now it's not operating at all. And they're not going to turn it back on until the sanctions come to an end. So given that the European politicians are basically doubling down and saying they're going to do whatever they can do to help Ukraine, you shouldn't expect these sanctions to end anytime soon.
I don't anticipate the I don't anticipate it being that difficult for them to get through the winter, but next winter, that's when it's going to bite.
Well, what you mean by that is that they've got some sort of backup. Basically, they've got like tankers or tanks. It's somewhere that where they're storing essentially the natural gas and the oil for the wintertime. And they have hit their goals, or they've come very close.
Yeah.
They're going to hit their goals, basically, of getting those things stocked up. But even with that, they're still telling the member states in the EU that they need to cut back by 15%.
Right. And it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt a lot. You've got to lower your temperature. You got to... I mean, there's all sorts of things that I'm trying to think of some of the other things they're doing, but they're doing all sorts of restrictions.
They're just starting it. They're not even really kicking this into high gear. They're kind of telegraphing that that's coming.
Yep.
They're saying to people that that's going to happen. Things like that are going to happen. But I don't think they've gotten very specific on what. Like right now, it's a 15% voluntary cut.
I don't know. I know there was some protests already over some of these restrictions. So I don't know if they have started some of them, but not others.
Perhaps.
Or it might. I think it's something. It might be something more like that, where it's because they're already protesting, and usually people don't protest something until it's actually affecting them. So
that tends to be true. You're right about that. Obviously, we're not over there. We don't know all the details. Yeah. We do see some stories from time to time. I had seen that some countries were voluntarily cutting back 15%, and then we saw the story about, I think it was Spain, where they told any business that's open to the public has to cut back to like 80 degree Fahrenheit temperatures in their stores or whatever. So like you can't have much air conditioning going on. So there definitely already were some restrictions into place. I don't know how much of it was affecting people in homes. When you think about 10%, it doesn't sound like a lot, right?
63 degrees.
Yeah. Like when it comes to, you know, temperature in your home, 10%'s a pretty big cut.
Yeah, I mean, even a degree or two can be the difference between, you know,
being comfortable,
feeling chilly
and not
being comfortable and not, for sure.
Well, hopefully they're not measuring this in Kelvin, which is really the way to calculate temperatures as percentages, because Kelvin is just like the Celsius scale, except it's translated down so that zero Kelvin is actually absolute zero, where the atom stops spinning.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they use Celsius in most places in the European Union.
Yeah, all the numbers have been in Celsius.
Right. So the media, this is again from activistpost.com. He's kind of going over some of the predictions that he made that appear to have largely come true, which is that, you know, now that Russia has completely cut off the natural gas supply and the G7 countries themselves have told, and that includes the EU, have told Russia that they're going to put in a price cap on Russian oil. That basically means they're not only are they not receiving Russian natural gas directly from Russia, but they're now no longer going to receive Russian oil because they're not willing to pay for it. So, I mean, those are recent developments. Wow. He points out that the media...
They should have elected a bag of hammers.
Would have been done a better job.
They're smarter.
I don't think they understand that socialism doesn't really work at the local level, but it especially doesn't work at the international level, which is effectively what they're trying to do. They're trying to force socialism, but it doesn't work.
They have more socialist schemes they're going to
But they failed to understand that they're not going to work. It's just the expected reaction of Russia occurred. It's not like the price caps were going to, like, you know, Russia was going to be like, okay, oh, we'll accept your, yeah, right, like accept your price caps. No, if you don't pay the bill, they're going to cut you off.
They'll just go sell it to China and India.
Yeah, just because you can, when you totally control an economy, you know, you can do things like that, but you don't control the international, you know.
Thank goodness.
But they act like they do. And when you treat, you know, other countries as if you control them, well, guess what? It's not going to go your way.
Nope. Yeah. I gotta wonder though, are they stupid or are they crazy like foxes? Is this another manufactured
crisis
to usher in the Great Reset?
What is going to happen next? That's what the question is over at activistpost.com. The gentleman here writing, Brandon Smith, points out that...
Let's go, Brandon.
He says the mainstream media talk will revolve around two things: what will be done to prevent disaster and how evil Russia is for cutting off the European population from warmth in the wintertime. And again, they're already blaming Putin over here for the gas prices.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, it's okay for us to cut off the things they need, but they shouldn't cut off the things we need. That's dirty pool.
I'm not going to get...
It's like Democrats and democracy. It's only democracy when their side wins.
That's right.
Yeah.
He says, I'm not going to get into the weeds of the morality of Russia's actions versus European sanctions. He says, after all, the EU sought to economically destroy Russia. And as I've written in the past, both sides are being played by globalists to create a worldwide crash. He says, but I do want to cover the inevitable European Union response. He says, European governments are now racing to implement the only policies they understand, stimulus policies. The UK and the EU are announcing plans to artificially subsidize energy providers and pay a percentage of electric bills for households and businesses. Of course, one has to ask.
Oh, happy day.
Why do you say that?
Yeah.
This just sounds crazy to me.
You knew they were going to do it, though, right? Like, what else could they do? It makes it look like, so I think this is where it comes back to nobody's argument that this is calculated.
Yeah.
That they know exactly what they're doing from an economic perspective. And so what they're doing here is they're saying, we know you guys are hurting, you business owners and people in the homeowners, you're hurting right now. So we're going to cut you a check and we're going to make it all better. Now, we know it's not going to make it all better, but the people who received that check, just like the Americans who received the stimulus checks that came out under Trump and then some more under Biden, they felt like it was free money and it was just mana from heaven, but it didn't help.
Morons had no idea that they got $14 in debt for every dollar that they received just out of the first package.
He says, what the EU is planning is essentially a form of price controls using inflated fiat money as a means to placate energy producers for as long as they can. Most oil and gas on the global market is purchased using the US dollar, not the euro, so it's unclear if Europe will be printing euros to buy dollars or attempting to buy oil, gas, and coal directly. In any case, this will greatly reduce the euro's value on the energy market, and prices will continue to rise for the EU anyway. The EU and UK are seeking to cap prices and pay the remainder. But if prices keep climbing, how much are they willing to subsidize and how much are they willing to devalue the euro or the pound in the process? Are they willing to go into complete currency implosion and hyperinflation just to pay for energy? All of the debate over government stimulus and the effects will be meaningless, though, if the issue of supply isn't taken into account. The EU can print as much money as they want, but this doesn't help them if they can't acquire enough energy resources to provide the heating and power that the public needs. There's zero chance they'll be able to fill the void left behind by Russian gas and oil, so a certain percentage of the European population is going to suffer regardless. And then he makes some predictions as to some of the developments that Europe is going to experience in the near term, including what California is already having: rolling blackouts, further price inflation in energy, business shutdowns due to operating costs. We're already seeing that happening, where businesses are on social media posting their energy bills, and they're saying, We can't do this. We cannot raise the price. I saw somebody in a British pub saying, I would have to raise my price of a pint to £16 in order to even get this bill paid, basically.
That's
heavy.
Yeah. My company had to increase the price of a certain product by about 10%. And we had a customer who buys fairly large quantities of this product from us. And just yesterday, it was, I believe, they called and they were asking about, you know, why the price went up. And they got put on hold and somebody else asked me this question. And I was like, inflation.
Yeah.
And the response, you know, and he was like, do you want me to tell the customer that? And I'm like, yeah, tell the customer that.
Eventually, there's a good chance angry crowds will be in the streets. We already saw major protests in Prague over the weekend, just this past weekend, with over, I think, estimated 100,000 in the streets from both the right and the left.
Nice.
The left coming together to protest against the government's involvement in the Ukraine situation. They wanted the government out of the Ukraine situation. So they had a chance then at staying warm, maybe, if they could get some actual gas from Russia for the wintertime. So...
Yeah. See, I don't see how the Ukraine is even our problem, except that, you know, they paid off Hunter Biden.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I mean, there's always a war going on.
Sure.
Somebody's always invading somebody, and we don't care.
I mean,
usually it's us.
I think the problem is more along the lines of the government's hindering sales of equipment and things of that nature. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well now the government's going to, you know, let these countries that are invaded buy equipment, you know, as opposed to, because if we had a free market, you know, then in theory, Ukraine could have armed itself, you know, I don't know, prior to invasion.
Without free weapons from the U.S.
Right,
taxpayer.
Right, right. I think that's the real
problem.
Well,
they didn't seem to have the foresight. I mean, Any country can set up a factory and build their own AK-47.
Hold on. So the government, the U.S. government and other governments restrict the sales of certain weaponry, right? Certain advanced weaponry. Mm-hmm. And as an example, Russia is well known for manufacturing weapons and selling them all around the world. But Russia is also dependent on, for its more sophisticated weapons, on computer microchips, which they have to get from certain other countries, which, guess what, the West controls. So the sanctions are actually hindering Russia's ability to manufacture
Wouldn't those microchips be coming from China?
Taiwan, the United States, basically the West controls those.
There's
most
no microchip manufacturers in China?
No. In China, they've got the 2-nanometer processes? I think China has up to 7 nanometers. That's the most advanced
smaller
they can manufacture.
Better.
Yeah, basically. Mm-hmm. So if you're talking about the most advanced microchips, which is how you get the pinpoint accuracy kind of stuff
for weaponry,
so that is what is currently being hindered by Russia. Currently
the people in Europe are going to get probably a little chilly this winter time. They're pointing out here at activistpost.com some of the likely developments we're going to see: rolling blackouts, more energy price increases, business shutdowns due to operating costs. That's already starting. Energy fascism, meaning informants and government monitoring of usage. There's already a proposal on the table that I saw in the news this week. I think it was Switzerland, where they're proposing to put in certain restrictions on energy usage, and that if you get caught, it's 3 years in prison.
Whoa.
So if you get your house a little too warm, you're going to be sitting in a cold jail cell. And of course, they're going to reward snitches, right? So if your family comes over and they see that you've got your thermostat set too high and, you know, uncle's mad at you for something, he may just turn you in.
How are you going to prove that? Like, you think they're
going to take a picture? I don't know.
How would they even know that it's your thermostat and not somebody else's thermostat, or that it wasn't pushed up 2 degrees? Somebody took a picture.
Well, as
most
people are just going to take the plea deal. They're not going to fight it in court, right?
Yeah, our system is so messed up. I totally agree. Government is terrible, and that's basically how it works.
Yep. They just throw their weight around and they usually get what they want. They say further, more prices going up on general goods, including food, more government price controls, government's pushing the idea of universal basic income, rationing of all necessities, severe economic decline and job losses, large numbers of people freezing in the winter, and finally, of course, civil unrest. He says, I could continue with this list, but I think you get the idea. It's not going to be pretty. For those of us in the United States, this seems...
The last one could be beautiful. Civil unrest.
Sure. For those of us in the U.S., this seems like a scenario out of sight and out of mind, but that won't be the case.
No.
Europe is is going to be scouring markets for energy supplies anywhere they can find them. And keep in mind, the U.S. is already sending 75% of its liquid natural gas exports to Europe. So I did not know that.
That is interesting, and yeah. I am very curious. So one of the things that people have to remember is the United States was already a exporter of oil and gas in recent years because they have expanded. It went down. I forget exactly what the time frame was, but over the last decade or so, the exploitation, I guess, has gone sky high. So we actually have we produce more than we consume, I believe it is, something to that effect.
Well, even if that's true, the fact that Europe's willing to pay more is still going to drive prices up.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Props for the couple of villages in Mexico that actually ran the government off and kept them off.
Yeah, I heard about those stories a few years ago, right? That happened?
Yeah, and I believe it's still going on.
Interesting.
You know, and I guess Ridley's going to get mad at me for talking about it. But
Ridley?
But,
yeah. Why would he get mad about that?
He doesn't like it when I talk about violence.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Well, I think it's more he doesn't like it when you advocate violence. Not that you ever have, but if it can be misconstrued as you advocating violence, then he gets upset.
Well, let's clarify. Yeah. I think there's a difference between saying you can use violence in self-defense and that you can use aggressive violence, right?
So sure. That's also true.
I mean, the bottom line, though, is if you've got a government you don't want and you're holding them off like these people and heroes in Mexico are, then, you know, you can't do that without having some level of physical threat.
Well, I mean, you're also talking about defensive violence here.
It has to be known that pretty much the cops have to know that it's not worth going in there for a paycheck.
And that's sort of a little bit, I don't want to say it's that different of a situation, but it's also a little bit of a different situation when the cops are also doing, I mean, they're basically the bad guys, right? I mean, they're coming in and stealing from these towns. And
what's that happening. Different from? Because that's what I've experienced here.
It's a little bit different.
I mean,
here
they rob us very formally.
It's a little bit
on paper. Yes. They give us a receipt.
But that's kind of
who the hell cares? Right. They're robbing us blind.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point that I'm trying to make, right? It's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Well, with regards to protesters throwing government goons out, I have no objection to that. If you get enough people to go in, just like they did recently in Iraq, where a bunch of people went into the presidential palace and like partied in the pool and did all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
I saw some of that.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah. So like if you're doing it in a way that is just an overwhelming amount of people, it doesn't have to be violent per se. Mm-hmm. Just having the numbers is going to be enough to drive those people out.
None of us have military experience, and in theory, there's no difference between theory and practice, but in practice, there nearly always is.
Oh, sure. Sure, no doubt.
So it just is what it is, but I like the hypotheticals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I enjoy taking the parts of what the media tells me apart and putting it back together different ways and seeing if it fits better.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It just really depends on how many people you have on your side. Ultimately, that's what everything depends on. That's what the Free State Project, which is the migration of libertarians moving to New Hampshire, depends on. So we need to have enough people to where we can outnumber the status quo. And I don't mean by physical attack, or I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about just doing activism. Well, we need to have more activists.
It's a form
here.
Of peaceful sort of revolution almost.
Well, it is, and you know, either way it goes, having more people is key.
Yeah, you have to. Whether it's for a civil disobedience movement or whether it's to get elected, you have to have numbers.
So I'm thinking about this for just a moment. That's not always the case. It's a certain, especially if you're talking about a violent conflict, it's a certain set of the population that you actually need on your side. But I get what you guys are saying.
You need more people is what you need.
The numbers are always good.
I'm not saying
having
numbers
more
are bad,
people
but
on your side will never hurt you.
It's the most important
factor. I mean, if you're voting, it won't help you because, as Stalin said, it doesn't matter who casts the votes.
Who
what matters
them.
Is who counts the votes.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. It's the most important factor. in every circumstance leading to change. If you don't have people on your side, you're never going to succeed. You cannot do it.
You don't have anybody on your side, of course not. Yeah. But if you have the population of, you know,
you don't need the majority.
No, of course not.
Because the majority
not.
Of people will do nothing, and they will sit aside, and then they'll take whatever side wins.
I mean, well, usually in military, I believe,
and that's just a given. There's always going to be a lot of people who are just undecided. Mm-hmm.
Well, they were literally talking about shutting down Germany's industry altogether, as I understood.
The German government,
yeah, not even you know, just pricing them out of business. It's just shut it down.
Right.
They said they were going to route the natural gas not to the industry but to the residential.
Wow.
The residents. So houses.
And how are they going to pay for that natural gas if they can't go to work?
You got me. You know, if anything, I would think it would be better to keep the factories going and have, you know, and have some sort of, I don't know, you know, shelter that is maybe, you know, heated, where people, if they can't get by in their houses, you know, just keep it warm enough to where the pipes don't freeze or something like that, and then go to the shelters, you know, because otherwise, what are you going to do? You're going to economically collapse your country.
That seems to be what the plan is, right?
I mean, that doesn't seem like a workable plan.
And along the lines in what we were talking about earlier, you know, like the biggest thing that we need is more people in New Hampshire.
And more libertarian people.
More libertarian people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The liberals need to leave. The conservatives need to go to Texas.
Well, they're coming.
Whatever.
I mean, we need more people, but they're coming.
I think we could find enough common ground with the conservatives that...
Nah, I don't think you're right.
I don't know about that.
I think they want you to believe that, but then they're going to start telling you how you can live and what you can put in your body and what your religion ought to be.
Here's the problem.
The question is, how many of them are going to be willing to back it by force? Because most people can manage to be pretty comfortable. One of the reasons I think we have borders is people tend to be pretty sanguine about what goes on the other side of them. It's like they do a lot of stuff in Mexico and in Canada that we think is nuts. And for my part, I could care less. I have absolutely no interest in saying, hey, you Canadians have to do it differently. Screw that.
Sure,
their own damn business.
But the conservatives
care. But we'll take their freedom fighters they don't have to kill them.
But the conservatives care a lot about the people trying to cross those borders. And they get really crazy about border patrol and increasing border restrictions.
Well, there's something to be... Good fences make good neighbors.
If you start supporting the conservative, let's say, because they, you know, support us in quotes, right? What you're going to have is you're going to be trading one liberty or you're going to be giving up one liberty for another. So
well,
maybe you'll get guns, but you'll lose
single jurisdiction. The way I imagine it would shake out, because although we tend to be able to get along with the conservatives, we're not them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not going to be that comfortable living amongst us, and we might not be that comfortable living amongst them. So I would say the best thing to do would be to work it out on a county by county basis and basically, get the libertarian. We could fit every free stater in one county easily.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen. You can't rally the cats. You cannot herd the cats into to one place. It's hard enough just to get people to move to New Hampshire.
Well,
you're not going to get them to move all
to one
place.
If the conservatives are shooting at them, they'll move.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I don't think it's going to come down to that. I think ultimately,
I think it has to, because the thing is, there's a lot of conservatives who are going to want to come with us. Okay,
with us to secede from the United States. You mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, it's unlikely, given the demographics, it's unlikely that we would have the force to prevent them.
I don't even know if I'm seeing that. I mean, I don't feel like the conservatives, I mean, I don't know. It seems like a lot of the conservatives are not necessarily, you know, they're very much big big government, just like the left is. But they're just, it's in a different way. It's in a military
way, right?
But
they are in practice. Their politicians definitely are.
They're very
but the thing
U.S.,
is,
United States, not New Hampshire.
The difference between Democrats and Republicans is Republicans want to believe that there's a better way than having the government do anything. And liberals don't want to believe that. I followed the Grateful Dead around when I was a teenager, and there's two kinds of hippies. Basically, you've got the Rainbow Gathering. They call them the Rainbows and the Drainbows. Hmm. And the Drainbows are the ones that are always that basically they found a group of people that will accept the fact that they're slovenly, so they just go there because they're slovenly. But then there are other hippies, like, you know, you couldn't do the Rainbow Festival without a lot of people doing a lot of hard work.
Mm-hmm, sure.
You know,
there's a lot of
unpaid,
cooking.
Organized, and actually cooperating, which libertarians could learn a thing or two from that.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys, I mean, they'll go out in national forests when they do their pork fest. They go out in a frigging national forest and they build like a village in this place. They set up huge kitchens to feed everybody, and you know, it has some annoying aspects, like they want to pool their tobacco, and it's like, yeah, I don't pool. But you know, it's they're hippies. They're not going to do any. I mean, they're not going to do, like, you know, shake you down for it,
right?
You know, but you know, I figure out pretty quickly amongst hippies who the libertarian hippies are.
Mm-hmm.
And they exist because there's a lot of them that they just want to help people.
Sure.
You know? But the problem is they don't have any resources, so they can't.
Mm-hmm.
Or they don't have many resources. There's some rich hippies out there.
So what was the point of bringing up the rainbow?
The point of bringing it up is that there are liberals that we can cooperate with.
I agree.
Because they would be perfectly happy, you know, out on the frontier somewhere. Think about how the leftists operate on Twitter.
Okay.
Okay. Basically, they're
attacking the Free State Project constantly.
Attacking it constantly, but usually attacking it with like stupid lies. I mean, mm-hmm. Oh, we're all transphobic. Yeah. Oh, even Aria, mm-hmm. We're all homophobic.
I was gonna laugh at that
even
one.
The Penguin Man.
Right.
You know, yeah. It's like it's complete nonsense.
All I can think of is the anti Free Stater protesting Keen. Where we had more libertarian LGBTQ folks on the libertarian side at their rally, and then they were saying we were anti-LGBT. What? That doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah.
How many of these people here are LGBTQ on your side? Because I don't see any. I don't know if any of them were. Maybe one person.
At
was,
least
but.
They weren't, and obviously.
The
yeah.
thing is, back in the day, the left loved the weirdo. You know,
they claimed to love the weirdo.
Well, no, they really did. They celebrated. They celebrated weird.
They're trying to get.
They just wanted
to
vote,
right? They want us to vote. For
no,
them.
No. You're talking about modern left. I'm talking about 20, 30 years ago. Okay. I was a liberal because. In my day, the conservatives were the way more hateful side.
I don't,
and there is a reason that the liberals are pissed off.
I don't disagree with that entirely
because I
think it's a bit of an overstatement. Because look, at the local, you know, at an individual level, I think you might be right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we go back 30 years, but at the same time. It's not like the Democrats who are in power, right? None of them are that way.
They used those movements.
And that's the thing. That's mostly because the Democratic Party has become absolutely, absolutely worthless.
The Discord is a centralized server, and it's completely controlled by the Discord Corporation. It is obviously not a good system for a long-term viability. But for that said, you can't blame the Free State Project for going where the people are, right? Like they feel like they need to have a presence in these places. I understand you roll your eyes at it, Chris, but the reality is that you got to go where the people are.
It's not so much rolling my eyes.
Some people care more about easy to use than secure.
They do.
Whatever they're doing on the internet, they might as well be doing it in the middle of the street because everybody can see. And they're just like, yeah, I don't care.
It's not about security. It's about losing control. Yeah. I mean, because if you start using things like platforms like Facebook and YouTube, and they're all centralized, you can get kicked off. And they're already, and they have been doing things like shadow banning us.
That's a big thing.
Kicking us off and so on. So why would we want to continue to contribute to their platform if we can help it? We need to get more people off those platforms.
Oh, I agree.
Unfortunately, you have to get that message on those platforms because that's where those people are.
Right.
Well, and there are technological solutions to that. What I would do if it was me was first off encourage all of my users to have a Twitter account and to hook up the Gazauta on Mastodon to the Gazinta on Twitter. So basically you keep tweeting interesting things. Everything that you toot also tweets, but then you encourage the people like, if you can get Tom Woods on board or people like that, you encourage them to say, well, I'm posting from Mastodon, so you can hear me, but I can't hear you. If you want to talk to me, come over to Mastodon.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be an ideal circumstance. It's just, it's really hard. It's really hard to get people to change their habits. The only way to do it seems like is to have them get cut off. It doesn't seem like anybody takes it seriously.
There's another way to do it because, frankly, a lot of the alternatives that people have offered have been, they put so much work into being secure and uncensorable that they haven't had time to make it usable yet. And, Matrix is just on the edge of that. It's gotten a lot better.
It was unusable when we first tried it several years ago.
It was unusable when I first encountered it.
When it was called Riot.
It's becoming usable. Yeah. And that's the thing. Is sometimes open source stuff takes years instead of months.
A lot of times developers don't like to document stuff. And it's their last thing on their priority list.
So how do you move things around on somebody's priority list?
You pay them.
You give them something in return because people can't do something for nothing. Nobody can deliver something for nothing. But God knows I try. If I'd had a budget for Self411, I would have had three or four guys working on it, and it would be knocked out by now. But
let me say this thing. The good news is that the server and everything is upgraded, and it's actually on a good track right now, right?
Mm-hmm. It's working. That's a good thing.
Well, there's a new version of Matrix has been upgraded too, right?
Is there? I didn't know what the changes.
It's the latest version, so okay, that's good. So
we still need to get rid of the Ukrainian chat rooms that somebody spammed into our server list. But
do you want me to have a look at that?
I don't know. You'd have to talk to. We don't need to go into this on the air.
Yeah.
But regardless, the server is there over at chat.freetalklive.com for anybody that wants to try it out. And I agree with you, Penguin, that people are. Chris, that people do need to make the move to these decentralized platforms. But the best thing that we can do in that area is to create those platforms and then, invite them over there. As you were saying, nobody get give people a reason to make that move. Say, oh, well, there's certain content you just can't get on Twitter. You can go over here and you can get it there. You can. There's content you cannot get on Discord. You can go over here and you can get it on these decentralized options.
Now, of course, the other thing that you could do, Brave Browser has an interesting idea with the basic attention token. Mm-hmm. Which basically you get paid for looking at certain content on the internet, and it's very little.
It's
a pittance, but
it's there.
And there's always the possibility that if enough people start using this, that pittance will suddenly turn into a significant sum.
Seems unlikely.
What is
a web view worth? Not much. I mean, remember they tried this back in the late 90s with one of those ad companies. Remember that one?
Was it something like All Advantage?
All Advantage, I think that's what it was.
The Resolve initiative in New Hampshire.
What about the Resolve initiative? I lost a few of your first words because we didn't have you. We had you muted here.
Yeah, Therese Grinnell is with the Resolve initiative in New Hampshire, and she has raised some concerns that I think will be near and dear to the hearts of every Free Talk Live host. Her beef is that a lot of liberty activists, or so-called liberty activists in some cases, she feels way too close to the governor in New Hampshire.
Huh, okay. Like what? What does that mean?
Well, I don't want to put words into her mouth. I don't remember the exact details of her concerns. But I was just, mainly I'm just curious as to what you guys think about the other guys who are running in the primary against the governor. There is a Republican primary for governor, and one of the other candidates is Thad Riley, I guess. I don't know much about him.
Yeah, all I know about that guy is that there was a question about independence. There was this initiative that you're talking about, the We the People New Hampshire. They had a candidates event that was probably close to a month ago at this point. And Bonnie and I took the night off on Friday. I think it was a Friday night. And we went out there to go and observe and do some secession outreach and pass out flyers, that kind of thing. And while I was there, I figured, there's going to be a debate. I might as well throw in a question about independence. So I wrote up a question on a little index card, and I mentioned that there was a study recently here in New Hampshire, the very first of its kind, that you can learn about if you go to nhexit.us. And I cited some of the study statistics that it was over half of Republicans in New Hampshire are ready for New Hampshire to be its own independent country now, and it was almost one out of three of the overall population, 29%. Of the population here. And so I said, given that,
and that says to me that we have to be able to find common ground with them, and we have to be able to establish boundaries that work for both groups of people, because with that many secessionists, they're not going to leave the state when the state leaves the country, not if we brought in a million libertarians.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're going to stay here because they voted for it. You have to have a large number of people voting for it to make it possible.
So because we have a variety of people that are active, that want to withdraw, and they want to get the divorce, and they want to obviously stay here when it happens. Even if we're not cooperating with those people before the fact, we're going to have to cooperate with them after the fact. We're going to have ways to draw borders and come to agreements.
I was hearing you guys talking about secession and conservatives, if you would get conservatives to go along. And I tend to really strongly differentiate, even nowadays, I differentiate conservatives from libertarians very sharply, different group of people. But that being said, so first answer to, can you get conservatives to kind of go along with you up there in the Free State and what you plan on doing? No, and a hard no, and a hell no. But once you ask the question, you are automatically filtering out the type of so-called, self-identified conservatives that are going to be open to that very non-conservative idea of a secession or a freedom movement or whatever, you're filtering a very smaller subset of people that might identify with the right and might have certain conservative ideas, and it's not ostensibly like, I don't know, a Christian conservative or any other type of specific other kind of grouping. So if you have a bunch of conservatives and a bunch of libertarians up there and a bunch of conservative libertarians and a whole gamut of people up there, you do have a question of how does that actually work? How do you live in your communities? And, you know, I think kind of Rich was getting at, there's kind of a stated preference in their politics, and then there's the revealed preference of what they would actually want to do and implement and take the time to do if they're moving up there for a freedom movement. And then one more thing. So what would a state based on like American conservatism look like in reality? Well, conservatism is the modern conservatism is a grievance movement. It's based on opposing the left, and the movement, this raison d'etre, is to oppose the left, and it's a grievance movement. So it doesn't have its own standalone ideology. And
well, I mean, the left doesn't have an ideology, and the conservatives don't have an ideology, but there are some things they want, right? Like, generally, conservatives want to tell you how to live. They want to tell you what you can do with your body, and they want to tell you what church you can go to, right? So, like, that's probably what you would see. And they love the military. So, I mean, you'd probably see militaristic society in which abortion was completely outlawed and drugs were highly restricted, but there's plenty of alcohol.
Oh, just the queen thing.
She's still dead.
No. Are you there?
She's still dead.
Yeah, and Guido Sarducci, too.
Who's that?
Sarducci. Remind me.
Back in the day, in the 70s, they had a running gag on Saturday Night Live where they would be doing their little newscast, and they'd stop everything and say, "This just in!" Mm-hmm. Father Guido Sarducci is still dead.
Was he a real character? Or like a real person?
I don't know exactly what he was. I mean, I'm pretty sure he was a comic imitation of a priest, although people have said the same of me. He wore this crazy black coat and hat.
He's a fictional character, apparently.
Yeah.
Jack, what else? Go ahead.
Oh, I just think it's kind of ironic that who just met her like 3 days ago? I saw it all over Twitter. The new conservative prime minister of England, like 3 days ago. There's so many conspiracies about.
Well, she had to be approved. The Queen had to approve her appointment or whatever as prime minister.
Do you think she whacked her?
No, I'm saying who knows. You know, there's a lot of conspiracies around the royal family. The reptilian thing.
Do you think she was drinking children's blood or having it infused in her body?
No, I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying there's a lot of conspiracies around her. That, you
know, if she did, she needs some money back because it didn't help.
My grandmother was 100% Welsh. In Wales, if you ever call a Welshman an Englishman, you know, in a bar, you'll have a fight on your hands. It's one of the few places that was never conquered in northern England.
Okay.
They ceded Scotland to the Vikings because the kings got weak. There was four, and then there became one, and they just got tired of being plundered and pillaged, so they gave Scotland to the Vikings.
It does get old.
Right across the sea was the Irish, so we started getting messed with. I'm black Irish. They never got over our castle walls. But anyway... as far as the bloodletting things, all of the old girls on my grandmother's side lived well into their 90s. So I don't think that's an issue.
Okay. Good to know.
The couple guys, I didn't know you had two penguin collars, but I doubt either one of them ever wear a long-tailed tuxedo with a monocle. And I think that's a prerequisite to be a penguin.
I see. I've always wanted him to do an ad for his computer business like that.
That'd be sweet. It'd be a good Halloween costume too.
Yeah.
No. We're a different kind of penguin. We're the belly, big belly, kind with the. Yeah.
What else, Major?
Well, I remember the character he brought up on Saturday Night Live, Father Guido Sarducci. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was just a little short dude and kind of. Almost looked Jewish if he was too dark. But it was a good character. Anyway, so this guy was caught on video camera. I'm thinking in a Walmart, some kind of a large store. And I'm going to call him China Joe, our hair-sniffing fearless leader, his major competition. We now have a butt sniffer in Texas. This guy.
Oh, wow.
I haven't seen
maybe
the
he could
video,
be Secretary of State.
Well, he was a pretty large fella, and he comes slinking up real quick behind these two pretty gals in the store. And evidently they must have sensed him, because one of them turned around, and, well, he kind of pretended to drop something and picked it up and then pretended like he was shopping.
Mm-hmm.
So he turned back around and didn't pay him no mind.
I am just very excited. They're going to build a youth homeless shelter for under age 21, just for them, finally, here in Albuquerque.
Are there that many homeless children or young people in Albuquerque?
Well, their count is from 1,600 and more. That's
hold on, let me just clarify. You said under the age of 21, which means that there are legal adults, probably going to be the bulk of it, right? We're talking about there's mostly going to be 18, 19, and 20-year-olds there, because I presume most people who are younger than that age still have parents, and if they're homeless, they're homeless with their parents.
Well, I think so. But
yeah, okay.
A lot of times, the thing is that those kids, the homeless kids, they don't, a lot of times they don't, they're runaways. They don't have parents. Mm-hmm. You know, they molest them, they beat them up, and they have to leave, or they're starving at home, so they leave. And so there, I've known there's teenage homeless teenagers at 14 or 13. They leave their home, or they come to an abandoned house. They're you know, I've met a kid that you're old enough when he went back home, the mom and the other kids were all gone. He was 16. So this happens to a lot of people, and they're finally going to address this problem. And
well, I don't know if it's going to help the problem. I mean, if you take these homeless teenagers and you put them in the hands of the government, then they could put them in the hands of foster parents, and then they might get abused even worse than what they were being abused at home.
That happens a lot with the Children and Family Services. I've definitely got some sympathy. I was homeless at 16 by choice.
Mm-hmm. You ran away.
I didn't really run. It was kind of a mutual thing.
Where did you end up? Where were you sleeping?
It depended. Sometimes there was this dorm at the University of Michigan. And they had some kind of boiler room in the basement, and they had this vent. It was like a gigantic dryer vent. And so for a while, I was sleeping under this vent, and I'd take my coat off, and I'd put it behind my head, and I'd watch the snow.
You just listened to the new extended Free Talk Live Daily Digest. We felt this format was more appropriate for our podcast audience and decided to make it our official podcast. If you subscribe to the Daily Digest or full episode RSS feeds, please resubscribe to the main FTL podcast feed, which you can find at feeds.freetalklive.com. The other feeds rely on a third-party service, and though they'll have the same content, we can't be sure how long they'll stay online. If you still want the entire radio show, you can listen live every night from 7 to 10 Eastern at freetalklive.com. Full video archives are at video.freetalklive.com, or tune into our 24/7 stream for the latest show at listen.freetalklive.com. Free Talk Live's amps will continue to receive the full two-hour radio show with no recorded commercials via podcast through Patreon, so please join amps.freetalklive.com for just $5 a month. Thank you for listening to and sharing Free Talk Live.